Hi there, this is Ron Myers, and I'm one of the directors of the Consulting Room. And in this podcast, I want to deal with some of the financial questions that we are being asked by many of our members today. I'd like to introduce Grace Oforiokuma, who is the Portfolio Chief Financial Officer at the CFO Centre and has experience as a financial director across different market sectors, including 5 years as Chief Financial Officer at Reddington Multi-Specialist Hospital Group. And it's also my pleasure to introduce Haider Malji, who is a principal at the FD Centre and also has experience as a financial director in different industry sectors. Both of them work with the FD Centre, and this allows smaller organisations to benefit from the expertise of a highly experienced financial director without incurring the expense of hiring someone full time. So, Grace, I just want to say hi and thank you. And how are you this morning?
Hi, fine. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Great.
And likewise, pleasure to be here.
Brilliant. Okay, that's fantastic. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. I know you're both very busy at the moment answering all sorts of questions from customers who have some of these, you know, kind of financial issues and problems that they need addressing. So I'm going to start off really with Grace by asking you on probably one of the most common questions. It's the broadest questions that we have at this time. Clinic owners and, in fact, many associated aesthetic industry suppliers have lost the majority of their income as clinics have obviously had to close for treatments. So what steps should they be taking to mitigate losses and secure their business at this point?
I think that's a great question, and it is definitely very broad. I would respond by saying that the steps that can be taken probably fall into three key areas: assess, mitigate, and manage. So the business needs to assess its current position, and that should be done very quickly. That's with regard to cash needs, the impact on the business model going forward, and current commitments. So most organizations, we would look to create a short-term, possibly a 12-week rolling cash flow forecast so that we can understand what the cash needs and constraints are. We'd also pick up on the business plan projections. So I'd suggest that businesses do this, where they look at their business model for the next 12 to 36 months and consider the best and the worst case scenarios. And the third thing in under assess is reviewing contractual terms, understanding the business liabilities and the responsibilities. So this could relate to banking agreements, property rental agreements, suppliers, employment contracts. And I mean, that's just to mention a few, but it's important to understand what the business is contractually tied into.
Okay.
Once you've assessed the business position, you would seek to mitigate the risks and losses by putting in solutions. So without going into too much detail, firstly, you might consider stemming all non-essential cash flows, possibly considering ways to increase income streams if you haven't closed your doors or you haven't had to, considering expanding services that you currently provide. So as an example, that might include moving to virtual consultations. It might include increasing the sale of skincare products or similar.
Okay.
Of course, we'd recommend that you take advantage of all of the government-backed loans, grants, and payment deferrals that are out there. And also engage with your banks, with your suppliers, with your commercial landlord to look at further deferrals of payment where possible. And of course, consider which staff should be furloughed. So following on from that, looking at managing your stakeholders, this is really the communications with all of those stakeholders that I've already mentioned, but also the communication with your clients and how you maintain and stay in their line of vision during this time. Because what you're hoping to do is to grow bookings ready for when you open again. So you might consider appropriate marketing, and in this case, that might include things like webinars, podcasts, online tutorials, anything that will make you remain visible as well as appropriate marketing. So the caveat to that is that, you know, if you've been furloughed yourself as part of the closure, then you would be unable to carry out any work, including marketing, that would increase commercial income streams.
That's great. That's fantastic advice, Grace. And I particularly, I think, like, I mean, obviously, really getting down to the core numbers in your business in this, trying to project this 12-week rolling cash flow forecast is probably critical during this period, isn't it? Because it is being able to have control over the cash in your bank that probably is one of the most critical issues at this point in time.
That's right.
Okay, lovely. So, Haida, are clinics eligible for a business interruption loan? And if so, how do they make an application at this point? Because I know there's a bit of confusion around this.
Okay, yes. The Corona Business Interruption Loan Scheme, or as you probably hear it now, a lot being called CBILS, is available to every business. And that is even if your clinic or business is partly open. So, for example, I know there are some clinics that send out, also not only do they do the surgeries in-house, but they also send product out. So the fact that you may be, your online sales and your products are selling, you are still able to apply for a loan. And I would strongly recommend every business that is, you know, that has been affected, apply for the loan, because the loan is effectively a free, it's interest-free without any setup fees or any charges. It's one of the few times I've ever seen a loan scheme that actually there is no setup fee and it's interest-free for a 12-month period. So it's effectively free money.
Right. Well, that's always music to ears, I think, of any business owner, because also, you know, capital and access to capital is always difficult, even at the best of times, as we know. And I agree with you as well. I think if your business is in a position whereby you can see the future for your business through this, then I think having something there that's a cushion at least is probably not going to help. So, but just from a practical point of view, Grace,
can I come back? Because that was one part of it. The other part was, how do you make an application? Right?
Okay, yes.
Yeah. So the easiest way to do that was go through, the easiest and the fastest way of doing it is to go through your existing advisor, whether that be a bank or another lender that you've got a relationship with. Yeah. And that should be the easiest way. And you will, just so you know, you will need to provide financial information. So that will include a P&L, balance sheet, and cash flow forecast.
Yeah.
And a simple synopsis of how your business has been affected by COVID-19 and what steps you've taken, COVID-19, and what steps you've taken to mitigate that. Okay. It doesn't take very much, as in the synopsis, but you do need to prepare a P&L balance sheet and forecast to show what effect the business has had on your business and why you need the money.
Yeah. Okay, fine. That's cool. And I can imagine actually pretty much every business, especially in our arena, can make a case for that because of literally the dramatic loss of income and sometimes no income at all. So
absolutely, because you've had most clinics would have had to close their doors. So you can, I would say 95% of the businesses we're talking to today will be in a case where they can make they have closed their doors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Grace. So if a business applied, let's say, for a commercial loan or lease on a piece of equipment last year but were rejected, would they still qualify for a business interruption loan at this point, Grace?
Well, the short answer to this is it depends.
Okay.
It depends on the lender who's assessing the applications. So although the business may be eligible under the terms of the scheme, ultimately an application may or may not be approved. But having said that, government and lenders want businesses to survive. I mean, they understand the impact and they're looking to do everything that they can. Having said that, all lending applications are still subject to satisfactory credit assessment and to a review of whether the lender thinks that the business will be able to repay amounts borrowed. So if the business is eligible and was viable prior to the pandemic conditions, then it's likely that the loan will be granted.
Yeah.
I mean, the government provides a guarantee on 80% of all the money lent through the scheme. So this encourages lenders to, accept loans that might otherwise be considered marginal and may have been declined under normal circumstances. But banks make their own decisions on this.
Yeah.
So what I would say is, in my recommendation, if the business is eligible under the terms, would benefit from a loan in this situation and has a strong and realistic recovery plan, and of course, can state that in the application, then I would suggest that they make the application regardless of any previous rejections.
Great. Okay. Well, that's actually quite encouraging for people, because I think there may be people that feel that they don't actually kind of qualify because they've been turned down in the past. So there's no guarantee that they will get accepted, but don't be discouraged by the fact that's that you might have been turned in the past. Okay, that's great. So, Ada, how does a business determine exactly how much they should apply for?
This is a really easy one, yeah. And I would say as much as you can get.
Fine.
However, just to qualify my answer and the point I made earlier, you need to justify it. So whatever you put in your business plan or your cash flow forecast, you need to justify justify it by numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, to reiterate, absolutely 100%. Even if you don't need it right now, get the money, because it's always easier to get money when you don't need it than when you do need it. Right?
Yeah, I would agree. I think none of us really know what the trading conditions are going to be like the other side of this. We're obviously nowhere in a recession. So I think we can all imagine that it's probably going to be more difficult to acquire and keep customers post COVID-19 than it will be before. So I imagine having that cushion there in the event that it takes a little bit more time to kind of get back up to your current levels of turnover and of profitability is not going to hurt, is it?
Absolutely not. And just to reiterate the point, so the clients I work with, I set up lending facilities for those clients, and we just didn't take them. So actually now we make applications for C-bills with those banks, because we've already had good relationships and they know us well enough already, because we kept them up with information. Yeah. It's literally a 2-minute it's literally a turnaround within a couple of days, and the applications are in.
Fantastic. Okay, that's great. So, Grace, can you just explain what other funding might be available to a business during this time outside of the CBIL?
Okay. So, right. So we've talked about the CBIL. Yeah. Sorry, excuse me. Businesses can also access asset finance. They could look at invoice financing and, of course, overdraft facilities as usual.
Yeah.
It could potentially be eligible for Small Business Grants Fund, depending on rateable volume. Okay. Commercial loans remain an option, as they always have. And they could look at the injection of funds through shareholder capital and any alternative debt funding.
Yeah.
Of course, apart from the loans and funding, there's a wealth of other aid out there, the mm-hmm. time to pay and so on. But just focusing on those areas, yeah.
So you feel that the people who provide those other sources are still willing to potentially lend to a business as long as they feel it's viable?
I think yes, it is about viability, and it is about the information that Hader has mentioned that would need to be prepared for any loan, loan application. It's about the strength of where you will be as a business after all of this.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, are there any other, while we're just talking about loans, any other things that a business should consider before they apply for a loan?
Well, I mean, this is the scary part, I think, mm-hmm. as an advisor. I think one of the things you should really consider is, if you come out this the other side, and you need to decide whether you will be able to survive as a business.
Yeah.
Because if you don't think you can survive, yeah, or I'll put this in the percentage terms. If you don't think you could, there's at least a 25% chance of you surviving afterwards, then I would strongly recommend that you consider your options.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you want to do is take money, even though it's interest-free and backed by the government and whatever, but you don't want to have that hanging on you as a business and you as a director of the business.
Yeah. So really then I think the key thing then is probably getting really good advice in that assessment process around exactly, where your business stands at this point in time, your current levels of debt, the levels of profitability, and getting...
Well, there's two factors in that. One is... The financial assessment, you can, yes, your team, your finance advisors, whoever you have, those guys should be able to tell you how financially strong or what your strengths and weakness.
Yeah.
But the one of the key critical components is you as the business owner and the businessman, you should know what kind of level of sales you would expect to get on the other side of this business if things were normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would suggest if you then take that at least at 50% as a minimum. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that way you can then say, right, if they were 50% of what I'd normally expect, how will I be able to survive and how long? And what steps I need to take?
That's actually great advice, because you're right. I mean, I think then if you can kind of model that in some way and say, well, if my sales drop by 50%, if you understand what your margins are and your other kind of costs, then you'd be able to model roughly where you could be and how long you could survive through that period. Yeah, okay, that's great.
But then on top of that, at 50%, that is actually the best case scenario out the other side. And then if you can survive that, then it's a case of saying, yeah, you know what? We could potentially survive, and then it might be worth going for a loan.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then it becomes a less of a subjective judgment, but it's still down to your understanding of you as your business. And you as the owner or the directors of the business, you will know that better than anyone else. Yeah. We as finance advisors can tell you how strong you are and what your likelihood is and what your requirements will be. And then you'll be able to judge whether you can hit those requirements.
It's incredibly difficult this time, because obviously every business owner, every entrepreneur has a huge amount of emotional capital invested in this, as well as, you know, proper capital as well, and cash and whatever. And I think sometimes just taking that emotion out of it and getting someone who can advise you to sit down and look really hard at the numbers and the reality of the situation probably helps a little bit, because, you know, entrepreneurs have to be enthusiastic and optimistic just as part of their nature. But also, I think, particularly at this point, we've also got to be realistic and look really hard at the situation that we're in at this point. So I like the idea around kind of modeling around this sort of 50% as being maybe a kind of a best case scenario for a few months afterwards. So
yeah,
that's useful. So
and also just the other thing is to actually put the numbers down on a piece of paper, right? Yeah. Makes a huge difference, because then you can see the stark reality of them in front of you.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Okay, so Grace, at the moment, there are some businesses that are really struggling at the moment to make payroll and or meet some supply demands within the next few weeks. Do you know how soon the government grants and or loans will be paid out to help people that really have that real immediate cash flow issue, especially around paying staff?
Right. Okay, so well, with regards to the business interruption loan, my experience is that, once the application is in, say a week to 2 weeks to turn around, and then with if an approval is gained, then another couple of weeks, two to four weeks maybe, to have those monies paid out, depending on the size of the loan. So banks are generally saying 4 to 6 weeks for that loan to come good.
Yeah.
But what I will say, though, is that it's a very popular scheme. And so banks have many applications. The volumes are extremely high. And so most lenders are saying, yes, we're looking for 4 to 6 weeks. However, it does depend on, you know, how we get through these things. The advice I'd give on that is make sure that your application is sound. You know, make sure that it includes everything that your lender has requested, so that you don't have to start the process again or have any delays.
Yeah.
With regards to the job retention scheme, I know that our clients are asking constantly, you know, when will the course be open? When can we start to do this? And the government have said this will be in place by the end of April. So we're kind of watching this space at this point in time, and hopefully it will be sooner rather than later. For business rates relief, the small business grant fund, that you know, businesses will be contacted by the local authority. So that's not something that is a sort of an open point. It's happening. And time to pay with regard to, say, for example, VAT, for those for those clinics that that have VAT services, VATable services, that is, that's just as simple as kind of turning off your direct debit so that you don't inadvertently pay over when actually, you know, those deferrals are already in place.
Yeah. Okay. That's good advice. Just to let you know as well, we lease premises in Rugby, and the Rugby Borough Council came back to us last week and said it hasn't happened yet, but they said we will have £10,000 come into our bank account this week. So it does look as though the Borough Councils are probably going to be the quickest in terms of actually getting physical cash into bank accounts.
Absolutely. I mean, I think some are faster than others. But you know, it's a relief to SMEs, you know, when that happens, when you get that notification and you know you haven't had to make a great effort in chasing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's great. Okay, so Haider, many clinics and suppliers have a small but very loyal workforce, and a lot of them with, you know, critical individual skill sets. Is there anything that you can advise at this time that the business owners can do to protect them financially?
Okay, so we're, you know, I think we've mentioned later on. I think we'll talk about furlough, but furlough is definitely one option, which is good for them. Yeah, but the other is, I think there's quite a lot of advice being given by the government on what people should be doing, as in financial in things they can do. And I think if, as a business, if you can send them links regularly, updates from the government, let me rephrase that. First thing you should be doing is, I think one of the things you should be doing is regularly communicating with your staff. Yep. Even if they're not working with you, having a regular communication with your staff to say, look, we're here as a business, we're here working with you, you know, and we're keeping you up to date with stuff. That's really important. Yeah. The second thing is then sending them a link of what the government's going on and what they're doing with the government. Yeah. Or what the government's giving them advice. Those links, they'll find that useful. The fact that you're still thinking about them, even though they're not working with you. And that gives them really, really, you know, that makes them feel wanted. And, you know, it's the kind of communication. And that's more important now than ever.
That's fine. I think that's good advice. And so really just looking at, again, what you can do to kind of help them look at personal financial help that the government can offer for individual situations. And I guess that's I agree with you. I think that's important and shows that you're really still caring for them.
And communicating once with them. The other one is, I mean, we all have members of our team that are absolutely critical to us, right, as part of the business. And when we come out the other side, you will need them to be able to grow and scale again, right? Yeah. So this is probably a good time to have a conversation with them about even if they are, let's say they are on you've put them on the scheme or the reduced the number of the pay you do. Say, look, once this is back up, let's talk about it now, how we can mitigate and help you going forward.
Yeah.
Once the business is back. And then they feel that you are thinking about theirs as well to make up the difference. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool. That's good advice. Okay, Grace, if you're a director, but who also works for the business part-time, can you actually furlough yourself?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, you can. So you may be eligible for that. And you would receive your grant of 80% of your regular wages up to a monthly cap of $2,500. Now, that's if you are paid via your payroll.
Yeah.
And so we've had a number of questions around this from our clients, and particularly as well around people who maybe run their own personal services companies and are sole directors. It's important to say that it applies to the portion of wage costs that goes through payroll. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if you are receiving dividends separately, that would not be included in the calculation.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. And I realize and understand kind of as business owners, and obviously we're still working in the business and we pay ourselves, as a lot of directors do, minimum salary and and you know, most of it dividend. But we can't furlough ourselves anyway because we're still working in the business. And
well, that's right. So that's an important point to make, and that is that as a director, you can continue to provide directorship or carry out directorship tasks such as filing and so on, all of the statutory things that you would have to do for your company. You can do that within reason. What you can't do is carry out your role as an employee, where you would be looking to further the business, grow the business, generate income and so on, because you cannot work for the business in that way during that period of time.
Yeah. So at the moment, actually, it is a lot of the directors that actually will probably, from a personal point of view, struggle a little bit more financially because of the fact that they aren't actually receiving any direct support for what they would take out of the business.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Grace, how do clinics discourage clients from cancellation or refunds for any courses that they might have already paid for?
Okay, this is an interesting one because some clients, basically, some clients have maybe already had bookings in and it's on a sort of, non-refundable discount basis.
Yeah.
And the clients are maybe taking the view and saying, well, you know what, I don't mind losing this X percent that was non-refundable. You know, I'd rather just do that and because I don't know how things are going to go in the future. So from the point of view of my clients and the clinics that I have worked with, if the aim itself is to hold on to existing bookings and it's also to maximize cash within the business and to generate additional bookings. So if you look at it that way, you're trying to basically hold on to those. Mm-hmm. So you consider offering incentives. And those incentives might include, say, discounts on courses of treatment. So if, for example, there was a course of three treatments, three skincare treatments had been offered and the person had paid their, it may be discounted already, but they'd paid their deposit on that, non-refundable deposit, and then and you want to retain that, you may increase that. And so I have another situation where, for example, they then offered, rather than offering just the first course, they offered future courses over a much longer period of time at a discounted rate. However, there was a request to pay a larger proportion up front.
Okay.
So you might look at how you structure your sales. Offer flexible booking periods, as I said, over a longer period. Keep your client communication strong. Look to generate the payment in advance if you can so that you have cash in the door. And, offer freebies where you can. Say for example, samples or skincare products. You might offer those because what you're really looking to do, as I said, is keep income in the business, grow bookings, and maintain, and retain clients.
Okay, fine. That's cool. So really, probably with all of this, it's on an individual basis and looking with that individual around what you can do to because obviously they probably still want the treatment, but then there may be the financial aspects of that. So what you can do to kind of hopefully come out with some sort of win-win somewhere along the line with that. Okay.
That's right. Yes.
Ada, this is something that I think a lot of clinics are particularly concerned about, and this is probably more the other end of this, because a lot of clinics owe a considerable amount of money to suppliers, either for lease payments on machines or for injectable or skincare products that they bought pre-lockdown. And a lot of the suppliers in our industry actually have been really good in giving a payment holiday, but I think many are worried that they will start pressing them for payment as soon as they start trading again. So how would you suggest they approach suppliers if they are really concerned about cash flow and paying past bills, but also have a need to order more products to run their business in the next few weeks when they can open their clinics and start to trade again?
Okay, so this is really a really good question, and I think it's really interesting. There are two points I'd like to make. First of all, let's talk about one part of it, which is the lease payments for the equipment and the equipment you have, right?
Yeah.
That is most companies that have given nearly all the companies that have given clinic's equipment will have backed that the cost of that to a finance provider.
Yeah.
Right. So I would suggest you contact contact as soon as you can your provider of your equipment and have a chat with them about making, even if they're giving you a lease holiday, have another chat with them and say thank you for doing that and thank you, you know, whatever. But after we start, you know, things, business is going to be tricky. It's going to take a while. So can we start having conversations about that? And they will be talking to finance providers as well. So this is not going to be a unusual conversation for them. But the providers will, each of the providers, whether they be equipment or stock providers, will be very, very open and love you for it as a business that you're actually talking to them.
Yeah.
Even before you're doing it. It's always so much better to be proactive than reactive on relationships, especially your main suppliers and your main providers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that you're also thinking about product after this thing's happened means as the supplier will look at you much more favorably and say, right, here's a business that knows it's going to go out the other side and grow and start selling and whatever. Here's somebody I want to help them with, right? And they'll be thinking, okay, great. Because their first instinct will be, will this company survive and will they be able to pay for the stock they already have? But the fact you're talking about growing the other side and keeping, that's a great conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really, really important. That's a very good conversation to have with your suppliers. They will love you for it, I promise. Just to give you context, we've a couple of my clients, I've had the same conversation with suppliers, and suppliers have been very open to new conversations.
Okay, cool. Well, this is it. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a synergistic relationship. The supplier obviously doesn't want bad debt, but also what they want to do is to ensure that there is some sort of, hope and payment plan out there. And, the last thing suppliers want, I suppose, is for someone just not to answer questions.
Yeah.
If they kind of get the other end around this. And so, I it's a great advice. Don't just rely on the fact that at the moment, most suppliers and the lease providers have just been quite generous and send us a payment holiday. Yeah. Get in touch with them and look at what happens the other end when you start trading again. That's great advice.
And actually, being proactive in any major relationship you have, being proactive is always the best way. Also, now there's another point. I know a lot of clinics buy product internationally because they get it sourced from Asia or Europe. Yeah. So you may not be able to get credit terms of those guys. And when you're starting the other side, your cash might be tight or whatever. There are specialist funders out there that help fund purchase of stock when you've got orders coming in.
Yeah.
So again, there are people out there that will help that. So again, don't feel like, oh, I can only start small, even though I've got a big order book, because I can't afford to fund it, because there are people that will do that.
Okay, cool. Brilliant. Thank you. That's really good advice. And also, Haider, as well, so I suppose this is kind of looking at there may be one or two businesses out there who are looking at this kind of worst case scenario, really, where they feel that maybe there's not that 25% chance that you alluded to early that they're going to be able to trade through this. Or if they've got a supplier that isn't really, listening to them and is maybe aggressively chasing them for debt, and they're considering the option of actually closing their business, where should they go to for best advice about handling this process in the correct way?
Okay. If it's a supplier that's chasing them, then I would strongly recommend they have a proper conversation with them. And if they can't have the conversation, to take it up the line of take it up. So for example, for one of my clients, the guy that was dealing with the property, rental property, he wasn't playing very, collaborative or cooperative. So I asked to talk to his director, and suddenly the tune changed, changed automatically overnight. And then they were being more collaborative. So there is always, with the supplier, there should always be a way. If, nearly, I would say 90% of the time, you should find a way of getting through that conversation. However, as a business, if there is a fundamental issue and you are very concerned about it, then at that point you should seek financial advice.
Yeah.
And a proper financial advice. Now, by proper financial advice, I mean effectively talk to an insolvency practitioner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a specialist that's a specialist providers to see as a business how to close down your business legally. And that's the important one. Close it out legally and properly.
Yeah.
Really, really important.
But this is the thing. And I, both Grace and I are chartered accountants, so we understand the profession, whatever. There are advisors out there, as in any industry, and there are good ones and bad ones.
Yeah.
And at a time of most stress, because you know, people will be, this is the most stressful, one of the most stressful periods of their lives if they're doing this, they should find someone who's been recommended to them.
Yeah.
And also somebody who's recommended them that they trust that person. So, for example, if you had a relationship with your auditors or your accountants, ask them to recommend someone.
Yeah.
Or somebody there who's been in who's in the finance industry. And even if you've got a relationship with your banks, because your banks will be your bankers. And this is me telling you a cathartic way of telling you this, because the bank will be equally pleased that you've done this, because the last thing you want to do is have a black mark on your financial record as a director or as a person.
Yeah.
And if you do this properly, it can be done, but you've got to have the good, right advice and the right person backing you.
Great. Okay, fine. So yeah, look at recommendations. Just don't go to Google and look at the first one that comes up.
Yeah. And I would, again, Google is great for a list of people and, you know, trusted advice and, you know, all of that kind of, you know, 5 stars, 4 stars, whatever.
Yeah.
This instance, I think it's really important you get a personal reference.
Yeah.
And if you can't get a personal reference or somebody knows, I mean, you'll have our contact details or whatever, but we can, there are people out there that are good people. I'm not saying the vast majority are good, but you don't want to have be in that one where you have that one person is not a good one. Yeah.
No, I totally understand that. And as you say, really, you know, you like at times of maximum stress, which you would be under then, you need someone who's going to be able to give you clear, honest advice and help during that process if needs be. So, okay, well, look, this has been fantastic. Thank you, both of you. And finally, Grace, I know both of you are chartered accountants, and obviously, excuse me, a lot of people will be going to accountants for advice, but can you tell me just a little bit more about your offer of help that you and the FD Centre can currently provide with the complimentary one-on-one financial scenarios planning call and the type of businesses that you can help best?
Okay, so earlier you had, you know, you had mentioned what, basically how the FD Center works, and you know, just to reiterate that, we generally work with SMEs to add value, and that's maybe where the business cannot afford or does not need a full-time finance director. And in the current environment, you know, we understand the challenges that businesses are going through. And therefore, this is the reason that we are offering on a complimentary basis. We're offering a 1-hour virtual meeting once a week for a 6 to 8 week period. So we will look at all the issues businesses are facing and how we can give some clarity and structure on what can and can't be done. And this is also, and actually possibly more importantly, an opportunity for business leaders to speak to someone who is completely impartial yet has the skill set needed to provide strong financial guidance and direction. So, you know, your last question to Haider, your last question was the question with regards to, you know, what they should do if, or, you know, or you know, if their business is actually facing closure, who they should go to.
Yeah.
Sometimes the business owner is, you know, might not have someone objective to speak to at that point in time, because there are some very difficult decisions that may need to be taken or certainly considered. So that's part of the service that we offer. And just on a positive note as well, I think, you know, this industry, this aesthetic sector, we would expect an increased demand, you know, once we kind of come out of this at the other end. So we're looking to help businesses to prepare for that and to be ready to take advantage of that, to position themselves.
Yeah.
So that they can benefit from that higher demand at that period.
Okay, that's fine. So just, that's brilliant. Just to clarify then, you say sort of a 1 hour one-on-one for, kind of complimentary session to really analyze some of the things that we discussed in the business, but then also for a, say, did you say 6 to 8 week period?
Yes. So this is for a 6 to 8 week period. So it'd be 1 hour a week for a six to eight week period. And we've chosen that because, you know, if you look at the, although no one knows exactly, you know, when this will all be over.
Yeah.
But the period of time that we would, you know, that this period of time is when companies are really, really struggling, don't know, you know, what might happen, not quite sure what's available to them, or even potentially maybe how to go about carrying out an assessment or, you know, or putting those solutions in place. So that's, a, you know, this is a key period of time that we feel that we can, you know, offer that benefit to businesses.
Which is absolutely unbelievable, really. And just to give us a scale as well, because obviously from we have quite a range of different business owners here, but you probably here you're looking at the more kind of sophisticated clinics that have, you know, different issues and problems around managing their business at this point in time. Can you give me an idea of roughly the kind of turnover of business?
Yes. So usually we would work with businesses who have turnover between 2 and 50 million.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, there are some, you know, there are some exceptions to that, but it really depends on the business itself. We would have to assess that.
Yeah. Okay, fine. That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for your help and advice. I really appreciate it and your time. As I know you guys are really busy, so... And just, you know, stay safe and enjoy this sunny day at some point, hopefully, if you can. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron. Great speaking to you.
Stay safe, Ron. Thank you.